We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning! Devontae deep! Oh, my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-footer!
Stop it!
Just stop it already!
All right, everyone. Welcome in to a live edition of Buzz Beat here on YouTube. I'm Richie, joined by Brian and Spencer. As always, it is draft night. There's a lot to get to because the Hornets not only are selecting at the number 11 spot, but there was a trade that happened probably about 45 minutes prior to draft time in which Charlotte also moved up 20 spots in the second round and acquired Mason Plumlee. So a lot to talk about here. Before we jump into the draft, a couple things that we want to note real quick. First off, we need to give a couple shout outs to our newest Buy Me a Coffee members, John Fitch, Drew Brown, Paul Hudson, Jordan Smith, our four newest members. I think they're all joined since our last episode. And then also we have a breaking news, I guess, if you want to call it. We have a newest member, a newest host of Buzz Beat here. We're going to add four here. This is our fourth member. You've heard him on the podcast before, and that is Lee Branscombe. Lee, how's it going?
Guys, I'm pumped, man. I have been a fan of the show for a long time. And then kind of once I got my own thing going and got to join as a guest a couple times, that was always a thrill. And now actually being a part of the team is the greatest thrill. So I'm grateful to you guys. And, you know, as pumped as I am about draft night, like, I'm just looking forward to the cold February evening after like a back-to-back with Cleveland and Detroit. Yeah. And we're like arguing about the rotation or which Martin twin should be playing more.
Yeah.
Those games are really, I think, like what bonds small market like fan bases and the media that cover them. And I'll be honest with you guys, I was like itching for one of those games the other day. Like during the finals games were so stressful, you know, watching Phoenix Milwaukee. And I was like, man, I could go for just a February 17th, you know, Hornets hosting, you know, the Raptors or whatever. You know, I'd love to have that right now in my life. Just some like low stakes regular season NBA basketball.
Well, Lee, it's awesome to have you, man. You have done some really incredible work over Witch Carolina. One of my traditions has been since you've been covering this is your draft board, you know, diving into that, comparing and contrasting. So we're really happy to have you, BuzzBeat, man. And job well done for what you've done so far. And I'm kind of surprised you decided to be a part of, you know, a member of the BuzzBeat crew, you know, so
couldn't
this
turn
is awesome.
It down, man. Couldn't turn it down. I'm pumped,
yeah,
guys.
This is great.
So.
He had a big signing bonus too, Spencer, that you did not receive, by the way.
I thought there might, there was some back door that I couldn't read into, you know, being an outsider, but yeah, that makes more sense.
All right, guys. So thanks again for joining us on YouTube. If you guys have any comments, questions, please put them in the chat and we will post them, get to them. Before we get to kind of the draft news, let's get to this trade real quick with Mason Plumlee. We have some varying opinions here between Brian, Spencer, myself, and Lee. I feel like from our text messages, Brian and Spencer are a little bit lower on this trade. Lee and myself, you know, while not like ecstatic about it, I think we're, you know, maybe try to see some positive out of it. But basically what happened, Hornets traded up 20 spots from the 57th pick to the 37th pick with Detroit. And in addition to that, they acquired center Mason Plumlee. So my initial thoughts with this, guys, is like, you know, on the court, I don't think it's much of an issue. You're going to get a guy that can pass, he can roll, he can cut. He's a solid rebounder on both ends of the court. I think he's an underrated rim protector, which Charlotte desperately needs. The biggest implication is on the cap, the salary cap. And maybe Mitch Kupchak never had any intentions of going after Rashawn Holmes, but now that they have acquired this guy who is going to be making $8 million for this upcoming season, obviously that's going to hinder their opportunities in the free agent market. So, Spencer, I think maybe you were the one that kind of came out the lowest on this trade, but initial thoughts on this, Spencer?
Yeah, I just think $16 million over 2 years is pretty expensive to move up 20 spots in the second round. You know, am I excited about the Hornets having the 37th pick? Yeah, certainly I am, because I think, you know, as we've all talked about, you know, I think in past podcasts here, there's a lot of depth in this draft. There's going to be good players there at 37. It's not to say that the Hornets can't get something really, really good at 37. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Plumlee's 31 years old. He could be dead money by next season. He might be dead money this season. I mean, that's not completely off the table. So, you know, it's kind of an old school deal, kind of trade, in my opinion, of what I've seen the Hornets do over the years. It's not super creative. Yeah, you get an extra, you know, bite at the apple late in the draft. You take on some money with your cap space. But, I would have rather the Hornets go into free agency and sign a guy like Nerlens Noel, even overpay a guy like Nerlens Noel, who I know is going to play and really be productive, you know, barring injury. But we don't know that with Mason. And again, you know, I brought up his age. Think of it this way. They're going to take on $8 million-ish for Mason Plumlee this coming season. They're still paying Nick Batum, who is obviously no longer a member of the Charlotte Hornets. So, it's not inconceivable that the Hornets are flushing away, you know, $16, $17 million in salary. I mean, seriously, when you look at it from a business perspective, it's just like, this is not like, if we were getting into the mid-first round, even like Lakers at 22, something like that, I would say, okay, this makes a little bit more sense. But pick 37 to take on $60 million salary over the next 2 years, like, it's hard for me to get on board with that. But happy for Mason Plumlee at age 31 to prove me wrong.
Yeah, it's like I'm a little closer to Spencer. I'm excited about some of the prospects that are going to be in the 37 pick range. Like, a good chance that a guy that you have a first round grade on falls to 37. So even if you're not trading into the first round, there's at least, that's one sort of way to look at it, you know. But you could look at, you know, Kessler Edwards could fall down there. You know, Aaron Henry could be there. De'Ron Sharp could somehow fall. Jeremiah Robinson Earl. So there's a lot of guys that could be in that range that would be, you know, really nice players to add. Plumlee, I don't think as a player is totally done yet. Like, we'll see. I mean, I don't think like this year went great in Detroit, but I think for the most part over the last couple of years, he's been a perfectly fine, like, good backup center. I like some of the ways you can use him with LaMelo. He's a pretty good passer. So that helps. You can run some offense through him. The only other thing I'm with Spencer. I don't think like you're getting a ton of value out of this. It's interesting for them now to turn the switch and try to be like a dumping ground place to take on salary and add assets, which is something that like we wanted them to do a year ago before the Hayward contract. They opted not to go that route, and now they're doing it. So that's a little interesting. And we'll see how much value they're actually able to squeeze out of this. There's a chance they add a guy that could be in their center rotation, be like a valuable player for them, and draft another good young player at 37. But like Spencer said, no matter what, you know, you're taking on the $16 million over 2 years. Plumlee has a trade kicker that'll kick in as well to bump up that salary for next season a little bit more. And I do, well, for whatever it's worth, too, I don't think, like, this takes them out of the free agency market for centers necessarily. Like, maybe Rashawn Holmes wasn't going to come into town already. You weren't going to get Jared Allen. You look around and say, like, all right, well, let's trade for this guy. We'll pick up an asset. And if we want, we can still go after Nerlens Noel or one of the other, like, you know, slightly cheaper centers that's going to be available on the free agency market that could look to bring back Cody Zeller. Hell, maybe this means if they have less space, like maybe they'll look to bring back Monk now too. Like, I just think they still have some possibilities here, you know? So I'm okay on it, you know, for the most part, but I am excited to see who they're going to pick at 37. They got a good pick with this, in my opinion.
Lee, we'll go to you. We'll definitely get to this question here, Maxton, but Lee, we'll go to you real quick about this trade. Thoughts?
Yeah, on the court, I do like it. I do think that Plumlee is a slight upgrade over Cody Zeller. And to the question, I don't think, and we chatted about this a little bit earlier, it doesn't necessarily mean for sure that we don't retain Cody Zeller. I like the fact that, like, this adds another, like, decent offensive connector to our offense, which is full of, like, pretty good passers, and yeah, it kind of keeps that theme going. I like that from an acquisition standpoint. I do think that I wasn't necessarily considering the cap implications maybe as much as I should have been in my initial reaction. I think those are all really fair and valid points. Mm-hmm. Past the names that we've kind of thrown around here, Nerlens Noel, Jared Allen, Rashawn Holmes, it gets really thin kind of after those main guys. You're talking Hassan Whiteside, you know. It's just like past that. I mean, Kelly Olynyk, like it gets really shallow after some of those main guys that we might would like. So I don't know that there was going to be a play there in free agency. Maybe there still is. I like it on the court. I think it's an upgrade. We've clearly all kind of pontificated about the concerns of the center rotation. And this adds a little bit of depth, not necessarily like a starter level center. But a nice add. And then to Brian's point, you move up in the draft. I'd love to see Charlotte take a swing at a point of attack defender at some point in this draft, whether that's Aaron Henry that Brian mentioned, Aaron Wiggins from Maryland, yeah, Raekwon Bray, maybe late in the draft, like somebody that gives us like some on the ball defensive juice. I'd love to see them take a swing at one of these guys, and maybe they will at 36, or maybe they will late in the draft.
Yeah.
Kessler Edwards known more for his team defense, and I don't think Kessler Edwards is going to be there at 37, but he's an excellent team defender, like really, really good rotationally, not bad on the ball, has versatility. I don't think he'll be there at 37, but he's another guy that could conceivably be there. Aaron Henry's definitely going to be there. He's a guy that I thought the Hornets, if he had stayed in the draft last year, that I thought Charlotte should have kicked the can on at 32. He came back and was even better this year at Michigan State, like evolved offensively a little bit. So he's another guy that would really give them some punch at the point of attack, can really fight and get over screens. So and can spot up and shoot and like playmake a little bit too. So he's a guy that I would really circle if they're going, you know, wing defender in that range, perhaps.
While we're talking about 37, Nemeas Kata out of Utah, yeah, State, not a wing defender, center, longest, tallest center. I think people realize that at the combine. I have a feeling that Charlotte might be targeting him at 37. Sorry, Richard, go ahead.
That would make a lot of sense, too. We talked about him. We talked about Kata on the last pod a little bit, too.
Yeah, and I believe he's worked out with Charlotte, so they've got a firsthand experience with him. Before we get away from this Mason Plumlee free agent talk and we fully shift our conversation over to the draft as it approaches number 11, to this question here, does that mean Cody Zeller is gone? I think we can all agree, no, it doesn't necessarily, you know, rule him out coming back, but also Cody Zeller is unrestricted. He's going to want to go somewhere to compete. He was even on, I think, the Woj podcast, I believe, and he talked about that, how he wants to go to a top four team in the East or a top four team in the West and be a team that is consistently competing night in and night out for a playoff spot. He thinks that is a winning basketball team. Now, my question becomes, and I was kind of talking to Brian before we started recording, even though Mason Plumlee is not a starter level center, who is going to be our starting center next year, considering the fact that we just ate up $8 million of cap space and you're not going to be able to get a Rashawn Holmes barring some kind of miracle. Maybe Nerlens Noel could be, you know, gettable in free agency, but would you get, like, let's say the Hornets were to grab a Nerlens Noel. Is Nerlens Noel your starter, or is that $8 million Mason Plumlee your starter?
I think you start Nerlens and you get the defense and the run jump lob guy. And then you Plumlee is the guy that you bring in the second unit and he plays with Devontae, assuming you resign Devontae Graham. And those guys are your sort of like offensive catalysts off the bench. And then depending on what you need to close the game out, you know, if you need shooting and small ball, you play PJ. If you need rim protection, you play Nerlens. If you need, you know, offensive, a little more, you know, passing or whatever out there, you can, in screen setting, you can go Plumlee. So, like, obviously I'd rather just have, like, Rashawn Holmes, you know, than that. Yeah. But, like, I think it would be sort of piecemeal style like that. And that's how you'd go into it. And I guess this would also allow us to just, like, further perpetuate the Miles Turner to Charlotte rumors for, you know, another year of will they or won't they with Miles Turner here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I tend to kind of lean where Brian's going here. I think it's definitely a possibility. Charlotte still adds another center in free agency and kind of, you know, in the dumpster diving variety, if you will. So you get Mason on, a little rich for my blood, but we'll see what a Nerlens Noel type would be. And then with these two picks, 11 and 37, you really swing for the fences, right? You go for, let's say, a Moses Moody's there at 11, and at 37, let's just say the most athletic guy in the draft is there, Greg Brown. And so now you've really used your draft on the young players that could, in three or four seasons, really change your franchise. So I think that it's possible. We'll find out here shortly, but it's possible that's kind of the path that Charlotte's thinking about.
And with the draft, there's always been these rumors with trading.
Richie, real quickly, last prediction on starting center for next season. Not Nick Richards. Ooh. Not Nick Richards.
That's bold.
I think actually the Hornets have signaled to us they've given up on Nick Richards.
yeah.
I think that's a possibility.
It's funny. Lee was high on Nick Richards last year.
I'm still holding out hope.
There you go.
I'm still holding out hope, guys.
All right. We'll see.
What I was getting at, as we approach the 11th pick here, Josh Giddey just went to the Oklahoma City Thunder, which I think is a surprise to most people. Not that he's a bad prospect, but just because I don't think there was any kind of linkage between those two teams. It didn't seem like anybody was mocking him to OKC. And it looks like Golden State is on the clock here about to announce their pick.
Kuminga. Golden State.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, I like Giddey to Oklahoma City. I think he in SGA, I mean, I don't know if that's what they're going to build around or whatever, but that's a pretty fun backcourt to add Giddey's playmaking and vision and passing next to Gilgeous Alexander. I like Giddey a good bit as a prospect.
I would add real quickly, with Giddey off the board, Memphis at 10 becomes, it really changes Charlotte's draft, because I think that's who Memphis wanted.
Yeah, well, then I guess like Moody comes into play. We'll see if Book Knight is still around at 10 too, right? Like that's another guy you could see Memphis maybe taking a swing on at 10 if he's still around. But yeah, I don't know. This could mean Moody's off the board before Charlotte picks at 11.
Godly.
And kind of in that same vein of like, does this mean Cody Zeller isn't back? Not necessarily. I also don't think it necessarily means we still don't take a big at 11. Like, Shingun may be there. Isaiah Jackson probably definitely will be there. Kai Jones may be there. It's going to be really interesting to see how this unfolds in front of Charlotte here. Giddey's definitely probably the surprise. I guess Barnes at 4 would be a little bit of a surprise too. I know, Brian, you enjoy Giddey's kind of like half court passing manipulation and his like ability to kind of spray the ball around out of the pick and roll. Oklahoma City's got a wild young roster right now. Like,
Yeah, they do. It's going to be interesting to see, like, when they're able to get a guy like Cunningham or to get a guy like Mobley or just, like, one of these guys that they know, okay, we're drafting this guy, so we're getting him as a rookie from day one, and we think he's a cornerstone. And, I mean, that's like, you know, they only got SGA a year after that, But I don't know. It feels like they're sort of like just spinning the wheels until they can get a guy like that via trade or you know, even better set through the draft. But yeah, you're right. They've got, I think Baisley has had some nice flashes for the Thunder too. It's like a, you know, kind of like do it all hybrid forward. So yeah, no, they've got some Brown. Not guarding pick and roll against Charlotte this year when they played out in Oklahoma City, but he is obviously huge. And, they just got a lot of good young players, interesting players on that roster. And yeah, obviously Wagner going to Orlando at number 8. So I like what Orlando did this draft, getting Suggs 5, Wagner 8.
Good.
Solid. And they just
broke Sacramento's heart there.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Oh boy.
Sacramento can use some defense. I wonder if they go Moses Moody here.
That's exactly my thought. Yep.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense to go Moody here.
Yeah, so we have our preferences scrolling down at the bottom of the video here. And I was doing this with the intention of the fact that they would attack Rashawn Holmes in free agency. So Moody and Booknight are my top two preferences. And I think Booknight could very well be there for Charlotte. My third preference is to trade back. There's been some rumors about that. But looks like Lee and... Spencer both have Sengun at number 1.
Welcome aboard, Lee.
Yeah, welcome aboard. I can't fully get there. I just can't because of his defense. Lee, you did a deep dive recently on him watching some video. Can you try to sell me on Sengun?
Yeah, so I mean, look, admittedly, like I was still cramming for this draft within the last week. There's just, you know, you got to try and get eyes on like 150 guys. Yeah. And I watched Sengun early in the process and kind of resigned myself to some of the, you know, the defensive concerns and the foot speed. And he's kind of just like this plodding, cumbersome offensive, foreign big. And going back on a deeper dive this week, like, don't get me wrong, like his offense is light years ahead of his defense. There's no doubt about that. And those concerns are still valid to a point. I think I was incredibly pleasantly surprised. He's like a much more active mover, I think, than I originally realized. I think a little bit of the foot speed stuff is being overblown. I like the way he gets vertical around the rim and rim protects. And I realize like he's not going up against NBA caliber athletes, but the Turkish Super League is really good. I mean, the team that I was watching him against most recently had Kyle Wilcher and Sam Decker, like guys that had, you know, a little bit more than a cup of coffee in the NBA. So I guess, you know, the offensive skills are like pretty undeniable. You know, he's a fantastic, fantastic passer. He's got every post move in the book at 18 years old. He's a pretty decent athlete and he can finish on the rim. So once I saw like a little bit more of the athletic movement and his ability to get vertical around the rim, I just like fully got on board the train late and moved him way up my board.
I would echo everything Lee just said. I mean, I just think the guy's an offensive genius. You know, at 18 years old, to watch what he does already, it's like, I know genius is a very strong word, but it's just hard not to like kind of fall at that conclusion. I think Memphis, I mean, Lee just laid it out perfectly. I think Memphis is the absolute perfect landing spot for him. I think he gives them something in the half court that they just don't have right now. You know, they got a bunch of athletes on that team. They're very young. You know, we know what Morant is as an athlete in transition. You know, we'll see where the shot goes. But like that team needs somebody that stabilizes their half court offense. And I think Sengun is absolutely perfect. So selfishly, I'm disappointed. Well, I'd be very thrilled if they decide to pass on him. I just don't think they would. They shouldn't, in my opinion. But yeah, I think Sengun, at his age, what he did in Turkey, the motor he plays with, the energy, active hands on defense. I know it's ugly now. His footwork is just an absolute mess. But I think he will get to a place that's acceptable. And I'll go ahead and say it. I think he's more comparable to Kevin Love than anything else that I've seen out there. And I think he has a chance to be better than Kevin Love. I'll just come out and say it.
Yeah, we'll see what the shooting projection goes. Like I buy Sengun as like a shooter. I think the key is going to be like, can he ever get to the volume and efficiency and the release of Kevin Love, who, you know, was one of the more impactful, you know, floor spacing big guys.
And a quick shooter too.
Yeah. In the first half of his career was a double-double machine and one of the best, you know, rebounders we had too. You know, as far as like the post game goes with Şengün, like the offensive feel is good. The chest work, the footwork, his touch, good hands, the post counters. Yeah, you know, I really like that little quick spin maneuver he has. Clearly he processes the game on a pretty special level. And I think that's sort of like the defining characteristic is just like how smoothly he sees the game. I like his on off ball activity. I like his ability to be like a DHO tower to work in two man game. I think there's a lot of cool ways Charlotte could incorporate him offensively if he was the pick at 11 with some of their five out concepts that they like to run. You know, I am not to the point where I think like Şengün is like irredeemably bad defensively. Like I don't go there. I don't think he's the worst defensive center in this class or anything like that. Like that to me is a little too much because I think the activity, which Lee and Spencer mentioned is not too bad. And, you know, it seems like he's maybe a little undersized, but hopefully he's still growing. I think another thing that would be kind of important for Şengün is, you know, can he get quicker than he is right now? I think that's going to actually be like a really sort of big deal for him. And unless we can like answer these questions sort of like definitively with his defense, it brings up issues with scalability with his offense and just like how much can he be on the court to unleash what is a very, very good offensive game and what is a guy that should be able to just immediately breathe life into an offense because he can score on the block. The passing is real. He, you know, he projects to be a good shooter. He can make plays on the short roll. You know, just, you know, can he either be able to float around and guard fours on the perimeter, or can he actually like anchor a defense? And if he can't do that, you know, is he able to provide enough surplus value offensively to sort of offset that? And then can you like team build around that to paper over some of the limitations? But so like, you know, I am not like anti Şengün pick at 11. I have my concerns, but I like, again, the offensive upside and skill and profile is obviously very impressive.
And I think if you drafted Şengün at 11, I think we could rule out Cody Zeller. What just happened?
Davion Mitchell, number 9, wow. Sacramento. Right.
Well, Charlotte is going to have their pick of the litter here.
Please, yeah, please be Moody. Goodness. Please be Moses Moody. That's who I'm hoping.
Moody Mafia, baby. Yeah. Come on down to Charlotte here.
Memphis, I don't know. Memphis could use outside shooting more than anything, but I don't know.
I think there's a very good chance Memphis takes Moody here.
And they just traded up to this pick too as well, which is frustrating.
Yeah.
Man, there's a lot of guys here. I mean,
Charlotte is going to have a lot of options here, and I'm sure that draft room just went into a little bit of a frizzy.
Keon Johnson still kicking around, Kai Jones, Moses Moody, Şengün, obviously.
Book night, Kispert.
Jared Butler. Obviously, like my guy Jaden Springer still around. I don't think he's going to be the pick, but man, I really wish Jaden Springer was the pick at 11. But yeah, they've got seven or eight guys that I think you can feel pretty comfortable with. Even Zaire Williams, I still really like. I buy him as a prospect. I know he needs to get stronger. 11's maybe a little bit of a reach for him, but I think you could justify a top 11 pick on Zaire Williams because he's such an underrated defender and that shot of his is just so pure. And I don't want to read too much into the numbers at Stanford because he had a really shitty situation playing college ball this year. So
I would say real quickly, I wouldn't be surprised if Charlotte's phones are ringing hot right now.
Dustin agrees with you in the comments here.
okay. Yeah, there you go. So all the players you guys just mentioned, I'm sure that there are teams in the mid first round, late first round, you know, in between those two that are calling Charlotte right now. But what's it going to take to get up? And I would think Sangoon's kind of like he's the treasure there. Yes. But who knows? Yes. Maybe Moses Moody is the treasure for other teams. So this is when I get very nervous about the Charlotte Hornets.
I know we're talking about the Hornets, but Mitchell's an interesting fit in Sacramento. No, like they've already got Fox. They have Halliburton.
Don't say that, Brian.
It's a little weird, right? Bobby Marks is very happy. Bobby Marks just said Sacramento nailed the pick. So case closed on that one. But that's interesting.
I will respectfully disagree. I don't love this pick, but
agreed.
Somebody get Spencer a towel. He's a little nervous over there.
Oklahoma City, come on down. 16 and 18, 11, and then Charlotte gets.
Why not? You got all of these picks in the future. Yeah. Come on. You know you want Sengun.
Charlotte gets Jaden Springer and Sengun, or Jared Butler, or whatever at 16 and 18. That would be pretty tasty. Honestly, that'd be real tasty if that were to happen.
Now, I wonder if Washington, who had just picked up the 22nd pick from the Lakers, if 15 and 22.
Yes, they can flip that. And I thought about that earlier. Yeah, Washington, 15 and 22, they're a shark here for sure.
That's a great call, too.
But my preference is if Moody's off the board and Memphis takes him, I would be willing to trade down to Oklahoma City. I'd be willing to trade down with Washington at 15 and 22.
The fact of the matter is, if they did trade back hypothetically to that 15-16 range, one of the guys that they have a positive like thumbs up grade for at 11 is going to fall to one of those picks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which is
just mathematically.
Yeah, exactly. Too many guys. Mitchell going top 10, it like changes a lot of things pretty quickly, I feel like.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Shout out to Mark Stein, but it's pretty crazy that the Wizards traded Westbrook and Max Scherzer in the same night. Oh, sorry, that was the Nationals. That traded Scherzer. Sorry, the baseball deadline and the
Scherzer. Did they trade Scherzer? Oh, dude,
going to the Padres. Yeah,
my buddy Ross is they took Zaire.
Literally, the Hornets have anything they want here.
Yeah. All right.
Wow.
So Z, I mean, I just said it a second ago. I think you could justify a top 10 pick with on Zaire Williams.
You called that, Brian. You just called
me. Yeah. I need to go get some air real quick.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy. I was going to say, you guys were mentioning a few prospects that teams might be kind of itching to get up and grab. This is not a guy that I'm personally super high on, but I think a ton of teams like James Bouknight, I think there would be some teams that would inquire on moving up for him.
It's just like he may have been there. I mean, maybe it's a bit of a stretch to say Zaire would be there at 17, but like I don't think that's like inconceivable for them to have this thought that, but yeah,
this makes that Pelicans Grizzlies trade even more confusing to me. I kind of lean towards the Grizzlies winning that trade, but that pick is not now. I think not that at all.
Yeah. Woj is out here saying Memphis moved up to 10. I think intimating that they wanted Zaire Williams, and that like maybe there was going to be some competition for him. In the 10 to 17, 16 range or whatever. So
I also heard that Memphis was trading up to 10 to then trade up again. Like that those are the rumors that I've also heard as well. But maybe that was like yesterday's rumors, and maybe Zaire Williams is really
who they were trying to target. The amount of like information and disinformation that's come out this week has been like just dizzying, man. Just whiplash.
I don't
literally every hour.
I like that. Yeah. I like Zaire a good bit. Like, I mean, he's 6'10", he's a wing, he can put it on the floor, he can shoot it. Like, what's there not to like? But you watch some of that film, it was super ugly at Stanford. You better really, really, really trust your player development to draft that guy at number 10.
I think he's got maybe the prettiest jump shot in the class. Gorgeous, high, like Devin Vassell height type release, you know? He's got to get a lot stronger. That will help him with the rim finishing, and that will help him with getting over screens defensively, which he ends up getting caught on way too many screens this season. But like, I still buy him. I don't think it's that much of a reach at 10. I think he can be a really impactful two-way guy that can give you some shooting, has some space creation with the basketball, and really could be, like, if he gets stronger, could be a real terror, like defensively at the point of attack, and just like the versatility, the team defense, I think could be pretty darn good for Zaire. But he's gonna have to get a lot stronger and healthy.
It sounds like at least judging from like our facial reactions, it sounds like Spencer and Brian might be ahead of me and Richie on the stream a little bit. So
I just wait for Spencer and Brian to make the notification. They're probably looking at notifications too.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Just making sure we're on the same page here. Cause, we're hot on the clock, right?
Yeah, we are. Yes, we are.
We're on.
Oh my gosh.
Anything can happen here.
All right.
Moody would be such a great pick, man. It would be such a good pick.
All right, can we do like 5 seconds? Go, 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 go. Who everybody would take, I'll go first.
Yeah, let's do it. Rapid fire style.
Sengun, Lee, go.
Sengun.
Ah, he's getting a little hesitant here, thinking Moody might be there. Moody Mafia, I have not. I'm a card carrying member. Bring me Moses Moody to Charlotte. Jaden Springer, I would be very happy with as well.
Yeah, Moody for me. He was my number one guy at number 11. And I actually didn't think you'd be here. I actually thought you'd get drafted somewhere between 9 or 10 there.
Yeah.
But
I'd be super happy with Kispert too, though. I would love Corey Kispert. I know y'all aren't quite as hot.
No, I'm with you. I could live with Kispert as well. Although I'd be more amenable to that if Moses Moody wasn't still on the board, though. Does that make sense? Although Lee, a couple weeks ago, I think Spencer, you were part of this as well. The three of us went back and forth on Twitter about Moody versus Kispert as well. We're seeing it play out here in real time with the Hornets. It's interesting.
Is there a wild card here?
Kai Jones, Jaden Springer.
Yeah.
I mean, just to get us started. Sure. I mean, you can never get the Hornets out of a good old wild card pick.
Da'Ron Sharpe coming.
My computer explode right in front of me. All right, now we're we don't know.
This is the Alexis Ojinka that we could go get.
Oh god.
Sengun.
Book night would be kind of I think one of you guys mentioned book night. I could kind of live with that, but I think I would prefer Moody over all these other names we're throwing out there, including Springer, Book Night, Sengun, Kispert, all of whom I think would be good picks. But I take Moody over that.
If the Hornets did draft Book Night, and maybe this is the case anyway, I think that Monk's gone. Like Book Night to me, I've compared Book Night to Monk just, with his rim finishing, the fact that he can be a shifty ball handler at times. He's got some off-ball movement. I know a lot of people are not as high on Book Night, but it seems like he got some like late jumpage where like he was projected to go six, seven, eight at some point. No. Now the fact that he's sitting here at 11.
He was an OKC darling for a week now. Which obviously now you look back on it, you're like, okay, that was the smoke.
His agent was working overtime the last few weeks. You know, I really feel like that because his name was really popping, you know, a fair amount actually.
To throw this scenario out there, I would actually rather have Monk on a second deal, which will be affordable. At least, you know, his $16 million cap hold throws you off the scent, but, you know, he's not going to cost anything close to that. And now that the Hornets have taken on $8 million in Mason Plumlee's salary, you know, they've already eaten into that salary. So I would rather have Monk at age, I don't know, what is he, 22, 23? Being in the league, 23 years old, being in the league this long than taking on Booknight. I would rather find a way to re-sign him.
Yeah, Monk has also been like pretty darn good the last two seasons. Like, I mean, not all the numbers bear that out, but I've done like a rewatch of some of his best games from this season, and admittedly, that's it's a biased sample, but holy moly, man, he had some just unbelievable offensive performances for Charlotte. And I'm not talking about just like he went nuclear and hit a bunch of jumpers. Like, playmaking was really creator. Good. Team defense, all that sort of stuff. So
he shot the ball better this year than he had in any previous season.
Yeah. I didn't buy the shooting, like the 3-point slump a season ago. You know, like I also think his like hand or thumb on his right hand was like messed up last season. It was bandaged the whole year.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just didn't. He every other year going back pre Kentucky, and then all other three of his four NBA seasons, he's been like a good to very good 3-point shooter.
The one thing that like you really like only Hornets fans like if you watch the games would know is that he is a good playmaker. But like the national media just seen some tweets about him. You know, deep dark Twitter. You know, tweets is like, yeah, but he's not a playmaker. It's like, you don't watch the games then. Yeah. Yes, he is a playmaker.
Like a versatile playmaker too. Right. Like in transition connector, second side pick and roll, like the pin down playmaking. He does it. He just does it in a bunch of different ways. Here we go. Well, James Booknight.
Wow.
Spencer just let out a sigh. He just let out a sigh.
Yeah. Well, look. I don't even know where to start, to be honest. Supremely talented offensive scorer. I mean, seriously, this guy can fill it up. I said it on the podcast in the past. I think he has a chance to be a real volume scorer in the league and a good one. Mm-hmm. I do buy the shot. He has a pretty stroke. It's very fluid. It looks natural. I know the percentage, you know, give or take 30%, somewhere around that. At UConn, like that team did not have spacing, had a lot of athletes, but didn't have spacing. Like I buy Booknight being a good player and a good scorer in the league. I don't like this pick here. I think it's not what Charlotte needed. Mm-hmm. And this certainly signals exactly what we were just talking about Malik Monk is not going to be a Charlotte Hornet next year.
And that could have been the case regardless, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been the case regardless, but, like, there's no way they're going to re-sign Malik Monk now after they drafted James Booknight. They were obviously disappointed in Monk, and they wanted to move on, and they wanted to drop that. So what this also signals is, you know, you can get rid of that $16 million cap hold. Now you have Booknight in there. Now you have, you know, depending on a few different things, anywhere from $12 to $15 million in cap space. I don't know. I just he's not the highest selling player left on the board. And with all these guys falling, I would have liked to see Charlotte really swing here.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with the Hornets outside of the center position is that they needed two-way guys. And I think Booknight right now on the defensive side of the court, that's probably where I see a lot of his issues just in terms of like getting lost off ball. I think he does have a tendency to do that, almost like Miles Bridges did his first couple of years in Charlotte. He does lock in at times when he's on the ball. I think that's where probably you're going to see his biggest asset on defense is on the ball. But to me, like, he's one of the best finishers, like, out of any prospect in this draft. He can, like, contort his body. Great finisher around the rim. It's a very big asset for him. And I think right now, when it comes to his offensive game, he's going to be able to kind of create shots for himself because he's so shifty and he can do in and out dribbles and string together a couple different types of moves. And we all talk about his off-ball movement as well. I think that's probably one of his more underrated aspects. But right now his shooting, maybe you don't buy the shooting, maybe you do buy the shooting, but the off-ball movement combined with the off-ball shooting, it kind of doesn't really add up because he's a good off-ball mover, but he hasn't really done a good job of shooting the ball when it comes to catch and shoot situation. So he actually was my second preference here behind Moody. I know that Spencer's a little bit lower on this. I do wonder, I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong, but maybe they're drafting for somebody else. But again, that's always in the back of my mind. That's always in the back of my mind.
So I'll say this with Book Knight. The sell with him is athletic combo guard with scoring pop who can play make some not that advanced of a passer. You know, he's not like making layered reads, real simple, sort of like one pass away stuff. Come off the screen, look to score, look for the roll man. If nothing's there, you know, kick it back out, keep it moving. But a dynamic off ball mover and scorer. I can think of a lot of creative ways that James Borrego could feature him offensively. Think of a lot of the stuff that like they use with Terry Rozier. Well, you could try that with James Book Knight as well. But sprinting around screens, using those actions to ramp up and get into his scoring maneuvers, good footwork to set those actions up, good pace, use of force. He's functionally strong, stronger than he looks, actually, I think, and does a nice job using angles. Very explosive vertical athlete. Like Richie said, he can contort and finish with some good smoothness, has nice touch around the rim, good body control, really some like pretty impressive, like creative finishes, absorbing contact, moving the ball around this season, touching it off the glass. I think some people see him as like an instant offensive guy that can heat up quickly and cook out of the pick and roll. But he is really more of this sort of like off-ball wing scoring type, right? So that's an interesting archetype to put next to LaMelo. And I think we saw it with some success with Terry Rozier this season.
With Rozier,
Despite the athletic traits that we just mentioned, pretty limited defensively, which Richie touched on, messes up his team defense assignments all the time. But I really do think the on-ball half-court movement stuff is interesting. And it's a spot where just like, look, he's going to have to excel at that early and often in his NBA career. You know, once he comes off those screens, what exactly can he do? You know, can he use that stuff to apply rim pressure? Can he hit threes coming off movement? Can he make some very simple reads and hit roll guys and stuff like that? So it's an okay pick. I don't think it's the most inspired one. I think Moody, the wingspan, the 3-and-D archetype, the fact that Moody has some you know, I think the high end outcome for Moody is higher than one for Book Knight, who's older than Moody too. It's okay, but I do like the off ball movement shooting, and I think it makes sense on Charlotte's roster. Unfortunately, it could also be the thing that cost you know, Malik Monk, which would be a bummer for me because I'll never stop buying Malik as a talent. And it's a guy that can really be a difference maker actually in the NBA.
Yeah, look, I mean, full disclosure, I was lower on Book Knight than most. If I'm trying to talk myself into this pick, I think it's a couple things. It's what Brian says, like this is a guard with some size on the wing. And if Charlotte was or is going to bring back Graham Monk and still have Rozier, those are obviously three like diminutive guards in our backcourt. And we've kind of talked ad nauseum about how that coexists in the future. So it makes sense from that standpoint. It just hurts with two big time shooters on the board that fell to 11 that we pass on them. If the shooting comes online with Book Knight, which I'm bearish on it, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. If the shooting comes online, I think that changes the calculus for like his ability to create in the half court. And you could be looking at a pretty special, you know, size combo guard. My concern and Charlotte's offense is he's a little bit of a ball stopper. Mm-hmm. You know, he was like an ISO creator a lot of times at UConn. He wanted to put the ball on the floor three or four different times, shake, you know, wiggle, get downhill. I just don't know how that fits with kind of the creators and the offensive connectors and like the way the ball just pops around in Charlotte's offense. That's where I get a little hung up. By tomorrow, I'll talk myself into this. I'm just a little bummed right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to kind of thread the needle in between what Brian and Lee said there is.
Whoa.
Oh, Josh Primo. Holy moly.
12. Whoa.
My gosh. I mean, I had him high on my board, but good Lord.
This draft is wild.
It is wild. And there all signs were pointing towards that. But yeah, I mean, what you guys said, like Brian brings up, and Brian, you've been tooting the horn on this for a while with him. You know, he can play off the ball. He is a very smart, high IQ mover off the ball, using screens, getting to his spots, getting to a space that gives him an open shot. And Lee, he is a little bit of a ball stopper, right? Like he does like to pound it. I think some of that was a little bit of, again, UConn's offense, what they needed. I don't know. I mean, this is a little bit of a player development bet here for Charlotte. And the last thing I'll say, I don't know what this means for Terry Rozier, but it probably doesn't mean that he's re-signed or extended because I think this would be sort of a replacement. Like they're not a perfect facsimile, but they're close enough to, it makes me think that like, okay, here's Rozier on an expiring contract. Charlotte's like, we'll see what happens, but they're geared and ready to cash out on that expiring contract this next summer, or excuse me, this next trade season. Trade deadline, if it comes up. So, yeah, I'm going to have to watch a lot more film, I'll be honest. I watched good enough, enough of Book Night to have a good feel for it, but I need to dig in deeper because this is not what I was hoping for.
Yeah, you were watching too many Turkish games over there, Spencer, too many Turkish games.
You're right about that. That and a lot of Arkansas games, yeah.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap up here. We're probably going to come back on when they pick at number 37, assuming they're still at 37. We're going to wrap up with our first round conversation, and we'll let you guys know if we hop back on YouTube. All right, everyone, we're back. The Hornets traded back into the first round with the 19th overall pick here with the New York Knicks. All signs are pointing to Kai Jones, who actually worked out for the Hornets twice. So that probably was a good indicator that the Hornets were interested in Kai Jones, that they brought him back. This guy is kind of like Brian has said before, more of a 4.5 than maybe a true 5. He plays more like a wing, both offensively and defensively. But the thing with this trade, we don't know the exact details, but the Hornets are giving up a future first round pick here. And we were discussing, you know, depending on the protections on this pick, we would hope that it would be lottery protected at least for the first year that they trade here. So Kai Jones is going or being picked by the Knicks. It's going to be a proposed trade to the Hornets. Kai Jones, fan of this guy or not?
Huge fan of Kai Jones. He was a lottery pick on my board. The thing with Kai Jones that I've been kind of a proponent of is like he's been framed as this massive high risk, high reward pick, which I think is definitely true to the upside. Like he's an asymmetric bet, but him reaching his full potential is going to be like an arduous task for him because he's got a long way to go. But like the off the dribble stuff that he flashes, the shooting that he flashes is super unique and uncommon for a player his size that moves the way he does. My whole point with Kai Jones and the reason why I like him is like, I don't think his I think he's got a pretty decent floor too, because even if like all the extra bells and whistles of the offensive stuff never comes around, he's still like a pretty good, you know, high level athlete, rim run. Rim protection needs to come around a little bit. He's got the tools to do it. He's got to actually execute it. But like vertical lob threat for sure with LaMelo and the pick and roll in transition. Mm-hmm. I just think like as at the very least, as like an energy big, he's going to be pretty useful. Then the gravy on top is if all the other stuff happens as well. Then you're starting to look like a potential, easily a starter level type player in the NBA. So that's kind of my Kai Jones rant. My head is spinning trying to process all this, but I like the pick.
Yeah, it's this is interesting. I did not foresee them going this route, but as Spencer was saying right before we got on here, Charlotte's going for it in this draft. There's no doubting like the talent and sort of like the upside intrigue and flashes that Kai showed this season. If you haven't watched him play, he really does move like a 6'11 wing. Like he is that sort of fluid laterally with the basketball, with his shot creation. Like he can do some pretty like unbelievable jarring stuff for a guy that size and that length. On the positive side, assuming he is able to tap into one of his better shooting outcomes, he can be a really good pick and roll, pick and pop target with LaMelo, which is something that the thing that I'm like most intrigued by with Kai Jones is what he does as a screener for you offensively, as a guy that can roll to the rim, can be a run jump guy, can be a pick and pop player. And then when you throw him into space like that, you know, can shoot off the catch. If there's a hard close, you know, he's a little limited in what he can do to attack a closeout. He's not going to like, you know, make a play for someone else, but he can put the ball on the deck, get to the hole. He's got some sort of like creative finishing packages, even break out, a Euro step in the half court. And he's got some pull up shooting abilities. The shot versatility was pretty good this season with Kai Jones. And I do like what he could do for you as like a guy that could screen and then just move in any direction after that. And so I like how that can pair with LaMelo. I like how that can play with PJ Washington, Miles Bridges, who do similar things, right? Like those guys can pick and they can do everything after that. So I think, having someone like Kai to that mix is interesting. I mean, who knows how much he'll play next year? He's already turned 20, but this is a bit of a development piece. I don't think he's going to be defensively, like he's just not going to be up to speed to be able to come in and really like play a lot of sustainable minutes, winning minutes with him on the court defensively. I mean, I could be wrong on that, but I just think that's going to take some time. The film is like tough with him defensively. He has moments with his athleticism and length that make you think, well, what could this guy be? Some other smaller stuff. I think he's a nice weak side cutter. I think that's a pretty underrated part of his game. We've talked about that on a previous pod before, but I think he and Raekwon Gray sort of fly under the radars to like big guy cutters. In this draft, there were passing flashes, but the emphasis, like flash is doing a lot of work in that sentence. I wouldn't say he's exactly like any sort of like creator for others, but a guy that can kind of close out, draw help and make a dump off or whatever, lay down pass. So, I'm not crazy about this maneuver, but I do like Kai Jones as a prospect. I like him as someone that could potentially develop and work into Charlotte's system and be a guy that you could see play with in some of these 3-4-5 lineups where everyone's floating around positionally with PJ and with Miles and just LaMelo, pulling all the strings. But this is just not the path I really saw them going at the start of the night to address some of the needs at center by, trading for Mason Plumlee, which of course added them another pick, and then trading back into the first round to get Kai Jones. It's interesting, but I do ultimately like Kai's upside offensively as a prospect.
So there's a few moving parts here on like how this kind of came to fruition. I think number one is New York and Charlotte have talked this week about 11 and about 19 and 21. And I think ultimately they couldn't find a deal that involved all those picks, but New York probably left it. Hey, we know who you want. Why don't you just call us later if it's working out that way? And I think that's kind of what happened here. So Charlotte made the, and that's part number two, Charlotte made the decision that it's time. This is our guy. We believe that number 19, this is really a top 10 talent. I think that if you've read the tea leaves this week, that Charlotte has believed that all along about Kai Jones. You know, we'll see. To Brian's point, I don't love the value proposition here. We'll see what the first round pick is in the future. If it's a lottery protected, so be it. I hope they take it out to like LaMelo's, final year on his rookie contract, if not farther than that, because that just means you're betting on your team to be good, right? So like that would kind of be what I hope the outcome is here, but we'll have to wait and see. In terms of Kai Jones as a prospect, I really it's hard not to watch him run the floor and not just be intrigued, right? Like a 6'10", 6'11", what he can do, his length. You know, the metrics don't jump off the page at you, but he has these moments, two-way moments, block a pass, go gobble up the loose ball, take it up the floor, hit the open man, relocate, knock down an open three. Yeah, I mean, like, the guy is supremely talented, but he is one of the worst decision makers I saw on film in the, in this draft class. And so it's like, how much can you get out of him? Or how much can you sharpen those tools? The one thing I will say, though, playing with LaMelo, and this has been brought up a lot, if they get Kai Jones to buy into a role, in a very specific role, mm-hmm. you know, you're a pick and pop. You're a screen and dive guy. We're going to place you in the corner every now and then because you're more of 4.5. You guys brought up his cutting abilities. Like if they get Kai Jones to buy into very 1, 2, 3, you know, A, B, C, D, this is what you do on the basketball floor, and that's how you succeed, and he buys into that, I think he can be a really good NBA player. But you watch Kai Jones on film, and to me, what's coming off to me is that he wants to play the three, right? Like he wants to be a wing. I don't think he's a wing. He's a long ways away from being a skilled wing. So
he fashions himself like Durant, you know? Like I know part of that is like the Texas jersey he's on running around, but just like, I don't know. For me, I see a guy like Usman Garuba that's still on the board that could have really helped you out defensively. I mean, hell, Keon Johnson's still around at this point in the draft too. So that's another guy, I guess, if you wanted to, you could have thought to have traded back in, and maybe there's, you think you can get some upside with Keon, you know, around, you know, 19 or 20 or whatever in the draft. So I don't know. I think Kai's an interesting guy to go back into it for, but I don't know. Spencer brought up the transition game. He is awesome in transition. Like
really
he
good.
Runs the court. Yeah. It's just the straight line speed, the finishing.
It's the best film he has to me.
Just open court. And like, yeah. The Hornets have LaMelo Ball. He's an employee of the team. They're going to run and they're going to do like, you know, crazy shit in transition and get into chaotic situations. And like, yeah, I'm sure those two guys will have some highlight plays together next season. I could also see, depending on how Charlotte fills out the roster, like I could see Kai also spending some time in Greensboro next year as well.
Yeah, depending on, you know, how they approach the bigs in the free agent market. So
Jaden Springer also hanging around too. Like there were guys that I think that would have made sense to get back into the first round four, but I'm not sure. Kai's not the guy I would have taken that chance on, even though I do like him as a prospect.
It seems like you guys are kind of down on the fact that, one, they traded back into the first round and traded a future first round pick. I know that Lee is a little bit higher on Kai Jones. I like his activity on both ends of the court. Obviously, he's going to have a lot of learning to do because he's only played the game for 5 years, right? Like, that's been a thing that's kind of been in the notes with Kai Jones. He's not very experienced. And you get him in a program with James Borrego, who is known for player development. And to your point, Spencer, if he can go in with the mindset that I only do X, Y, and Z and keep it simple, you know, slipping screens, picking and popping, and just letting his athletic ability take over, I think that's going to go a long way. But on the defensive side of the court, I see some issues there as well. I think out on the perimeter is where he probably excels, but down low and defending fives, I just can't really see it. Go ahead, Brian.
So Zach Lowe is reporting heavily protect the outgoing pick from Charlotte to New York, heavily protected 2022 first rounder with protections that decrease over the next three seasons, according to sources. Okay. Specifics are coming. Gotcha. But so, yeah, Teddy on the books right now will be a 2022 first round pick heavily protected. So, yeah, it would have to mean it would be insane for it not to be.
Right,
so,
right. Well, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see Kai Jones in Book Night in Summer League and LiAngelo, right?
Yeah, right. And, don't you guys think it's like a little funny that the Hornets have now used two first-round picks now on guys that are older than LaMelo Ball this year? Like both James Booknight and Kai Jones older than the Hornets' like star young point guard here.
Superstar Nate Darling will be in Vegas too, so let's not.
That's right. Hey man, I was going back through old U19 FIBA box scores this week, and Nate Darling was on the 2017 team with RJ Barrett for Canada.
The Canadian team.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. Mm-hmm. They beat Team USA out in
the pride of Nova Scotia is there.
That's right. Oh God. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what ends up happening with him because, I don't know. I'll be curious to see what they do with the two-way deals this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll be curious to see what they do with Riller, with Darling. It seems likely that, you know, if they end up keeping the late second, what is that, pick 57 that they still have, like, they end up using that. I mean, that probably turns into a two-way guy, I would guess, or maybe not. But, you know, we'll see there. But it feels like a part of the roster where there could be some moving and shaking there.
So we got some pick protections here on this Charlotte 2022 pick. So it's 1-18 protected next season, 1-16, 23, 1-14, 24, and in 2025, 1-14. So Charlotte did its lottery protected throughout its lifetime. Cool. And so, okay, yeah, and it will turn into two future seconds if it's not conveyed by 25. So I think that's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty low risk. If you're that sure of a prospect, which it seemed like, you know, again, the Hornets were married to Kai Jones for weeks now. If you're that sure of a guy, I think that's an okay risk to take.
Yeah, yeah. It legitimately is heavily protected.
Well, and this is like, yeah, I mean, that makes me feel a lot better, too, because now, you know, knock on wood, none of this happens. But if you have an injury derailed by injury or something and you're just unexpectedly really bad, you keep that big time lottery pick if for some reason the wheels fell off, you know. Yeah. I mean, this can happen in the NBA.
At no point will they lose a lottery pick because of this transaction. Right. is one way to think about it. You know, that softens it a little bit. But yeah.
And I will say, I although I'm probably the highest on Kai Jones out of us, I know Richie seems to like him too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's ridiculous to say that he would potentially spend time in Greensboro too, though. Like, that's kind of the, that's just the reality with Kai Jones right now. From a timeline standpoint, and, you know, at this point, I think we can feel decently confident about kind of the Hornets developmental program with the evidence we have of like the young roster development. And also, like, the one thing y'all kind of alluded to too, is like, LaMelo Ball brings out the best, you know, in his teammates. I mean, Miles Bridges deserves a ton of credit for his own player development, but LaMelo Ball allowed him to kind of show his best self in certain ways too. So, and I like the fact that LaMelo will be able to hopefully put Kai in, you know, situations where he can be successful, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm
saying. Yeah. I mean, to kind of go back to the protections and what it took to get this deal done, there's a very good chance that this pick does not convey next year, and the Hornets will need that pick because it's still going to be early on, right?
Yeah.
Yes. You get to 2023, it changes a little bit. But again, like, I think at that point, the expectations have changed. So for the Hornets to do this deal to get Kai Jones again, guy they really like, without having to get any kind of lottery risk, I think it's a job well done. I really do. And look, you brought up Lee, you know, how high you are on Kai. I really like Kai too. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. I did a little quick Twitter breakdown on him a few weeks ago. I just think that if he's not tailored in the right way along his development, he can be out of the league in a few years. Like, he's one of those guys, you know, because he just doesn't have a good concept of who he is as a player yet and what makes him successful on a basketball floor. But I do like the approach the Hornets are taking with the player development and how they seem to be slowly but surely kind of doubling down in that area and really, really utilizing Greensboro. I mean, I think that's a smart bet. And for the price that, like, I like this price way more than I like the Mason Plumlee price earlier in the night.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. It's a couple of numbers to just spit out about Kai Jones here. During his freshman season in Texas, just 7 of 24 on threes. In year two, not much more volume, but 13 of 34, so, you know, a little over 38%. Some of the other indicators are, like, okay, not great. And 69% from the free throw line this season, that's not really a positive indicator necessarily. Only 33% on long twos. So, you know, there's that as well. But the stroke looks good, right? Like, if you can trust the film a little bit on that. Looks pretty good. Seems projectable. 46 dunks this season. Shot 74.5% at the rim with 64% of those shots coming assisted, unsurprisingly, and you can expect that trend to continue, in the NBA. So yeah, anyways, 56% effective shooting on catch and shoots in the half court, according to Synergy as well. So, you know, he has a really intriguing offensive profile. If you can get the defense squared away, I really do believe that. I just think the defense is going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of work, and you're going to have to sort of like positionally figure out where he's going to slot in. But there is some idealized version of Kai Jones that develops well, and you can play him with PJ and Miles. And all of a sudden you've got three guys that he's like an amoeba in your front court, right? You saw them kind of do this with McDaniel some this year too, but you know, you've got three guys that can all switch around, that can give you some bit of rim protection, that can give you some shooting, and all three of them can be big time threats screening for LaMelo, which is, I think, there's some cool ways you could build around that offensively.
You know, we talk about switching in the backcourt so much, I think, in this, but the league is now to where the most important thing is being able to switch in the front court. To Brian's point, I mean, yes, like Jones is with PJ, whatever machination you want to put together, like the front court is very, very malleable defensively now.
Yeah.
The one thing that, like, you know, looking at this draft, like, I don't think we anticipated coming away with Kai Jones and Book Knight in the first round when we headed into tonight. And both of these players have some concerns on the defensive side of the court. And Hornets, you know, have always had some issues on the defensive side of the court. So we're not really addressing those issues quite yet. So maybe we're just trying to outscore everyone. Let's go round robin here. Just, you know, initial gut reaction. If you were to give this a grade in the first round, coming away with Book Knight, coming away with Kai Jones, and taking into consideration what they had to give up for Kai Jones. We just talked about how it actually is a lot better than maybe we initially anticipated. What letter grade would you give it, Lee?
It's been a big night. Like, right. We've added Mason Plumlee, Kai Jones, and James Book Knight to our roster. And oh, wait, we still have two more picks. So,
yeah.
But look, I'll go B minus. I feel pretty good about the night overall. I do think we've improved our roster tonight. I obviously wasn't a massive fan of the Book Knight pick, but I think I'll talk myself into that one. So yeah, I'll go B minus, B, somewhere in that range for me.
Yeah, I'm not too far behind. I'll say C plus, sort of more in between the C and the C plus as opposed to C plus B minus, but. Because I just think the Hornets have didn't get a ton of value out of the Plumlee transaction, and I thought they left a little meat on the bone at 11. Yeah, we'll see how this Kai Jones value prop works out here.
Yeah, I'm going to go C plus as well.
Okay, well, I'm going to go B minus to make it 50-50 here. So
perfect,
Lee, I'm on your side. the thing is like Kai Jones has one of the highest upsides in the draft. And I think most people were projecting the Hornets to draft him at number 11. So to get him at number 19, you got to take that into consideration as well. But to your point, you know, Book Knight probably wasn't the highest on your boards. He was like my second preference behind Moody. So we'll see. Both of these guys, like I said, have some issues on the defensive side of the court, and that's where the Hornets are lacking right now. So maybe they can address that at 37.
Maybe Jaden Springer falls to 37. Yes, guys, let's lock arms.
I thought about it a second ago for you, BG.
If you got a ritual that you go to for good luck, you know, whatever you do, whatever it takes here the next hour to get Jaden Springer the homecoming pick at number 37, start doing it. Yeah. Now, that would also change my opinion on the Plumlee transaction, which I'm pretty neutral on right now. But it would make it rather positive very quickly. So we'll see. I can't believe that dude. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm not entirely surprised he's still on the board. But it is nuts that Keon Johnson went 21 and Jaden Springer, the other Tennessee guy, still available.
I have to say, I'm not going to let myself get there yet, but Miles McBride at 37.
Like a perfect fit next to LaMelo too.
Yes.
Perfect fit. You give you that point of attack defender, spot up shooter, Yeah, I mean, he's even got a little post nasty post game too. Like, I love Rockets have gone Garuba.
Yeah, Garuba. Yeah.
I like that pick for them. They may have gotten the best defender in the draft at 23. We'll see.
Well, how about the compliment between Shin Gunn and Garuba for the Rockets?
Love that.
Like, oh my gosh.
I feel like that's been a back and forth in the BuzzBeat Slack thread for a while now. Now that they're both on the same roster.
The same team. Somehow.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yes. Somewhere there's like in some reality, there's a Spencer and a Brian. The two of us are coming together to like shake hands on this. Like, it all worked out in the end, you know, at least for Houston, it did.
A few names at 37 I want to bring up that are still available. Joe Weiskamp is one. Yeah. I mean, shooter, you know, in the Kispert mold, but maybe actually a better athlete, maybe a better NBA player one day. Bones Highland. Richmond boy.
From I can't believe he's still
available. You never know here. And then the last name I wanted to bring up, and I know we've talked about JT Thor a lot, so maybe we should resurface that, you know, but just taking Kai Jones. Yeah, I don't know. And then having two other centers in Greensboro right now, we'll see.
Hornets are known for drafting multiple centers in a draft. That's just how it works.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. True.
Interestingly, Thor and Jones are like 4.5s more than they are like pure five. Like, you know what I mean? So it would be funny if the Hornets went into the draft to address the five and just like only kind of drafted a center. You know what I mean?
The last high swing prospect I want to bring up is
Houston.
BJ Boston, Kentucky. Yeah. You know, you want to talk about a long wing. Came out of high school, very highly rated, can do a few things. I think that's what the Hornet, like, BJ Boston's not ready to go in, you know, to the NBA now and be a difference maker on the wing defensively. But to me, that's the biggest black eye in the Hornets roster that remains.
Yeah.
Like, they've done a few things tonight. They added some scoring. They had another center. I'm sure they'll get another center in free agency. At some point, the Hornets have to add, like, a wing that can guard multiple positions. They don't have that on the roster.
Yeah, like McBride and Springer, they're more like combo guards than they are like big wings, you know what I mean? But I'll say this about Boston. One, I haven't given up on him after the year at Kentucky. I would not be surprised if there was some sort of like undiagnosed, undisclosed injury he had last season. He was just not the same athlete in Lexington that he was as a prep, full stop. He can still create advantage with his handle. He just didn't have the burst at Kentucky to actually like, capitalize on it.
It's like tentative, that would lead
to the turnovers, that would lead to the bad shots. And he also shot the ball better as the year went along. So it's like you might be able to draft a guy that has like, you know, Jeremy Lamb, you know, offensive potential, but maybe even with more upside at 37. So just, I don't know. I haven't given up on Boston yet. And I think somebody could be, you know, lucking into a pretty good, you know, scoring wing. You know, late first round, early second round, if he's still on the board. But man, there's some really good players still around. Like Dosunmu, like he could fall out of the first round here as well. I don't know, man.
I think Henry will be there at 37 too.
I think he's such a good fit for them. I mean, I thought it a year ago, and really, like Henry's defense flies under the radar. I don't think he comes up in the discussions when we talk about best point of attack defender. That always ends up going to like Mitchell or Keon Johnson or McBride. Henry is an absolute tank at the point of attack, getting over screens. So, and you had New York going Quentin Grimes now at 25.
Wow, that's literally the name I was about to bring up.
The last couple of weeks have been very good for Quentin Grimes.
So, for sure.
Like the combine was like a catalyst for his stock to really like take off, and he probably jumped like 20 draft slots over the last month. It feels like.
All right, we're gonna log off here and probably jump back on at 37 when they draft De'Ron Sharp out of UNC. We probably will not do anything with the 56th overall pick for some obvious reasons, but we will catch you guys later.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.